Good morning. My name is Jim Graham, and I'm a member from the District of Columbia, and I call to order the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee on April the 10th, 2008. It is now 9:02. Congratulations. All right. We have, I note the presence of Mr. Benjamin from Maryland, Mr. McKay from Virginia, and Mr. Giancola is from the District of Columbia. And we need one more member to vote, but since we have nothing to vote on, we can proceed. And we're also not taking any votes at this committee.
No.
I guess that's a vote, isn't it? So I was going to say we put that off. Undoubtedly, there are lots of comments and revisions, but we will have to wait until a fifth member arrives for the minute. So we now proceed to the operational performance report. Is Mr. Francis here?
Yes, he is, sir.
But who's going to present this report?
Mr. Francis is, I'd like to have an opening comment, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Okay, a week ago Saturday, there was a lot of question whether or not Metro could respond to the crowds at the National Ballpark. We did so, and we moved people far quicker than even our estimates. After that period of time, I heard a lot of reports from the news media, and the real test will come this past Monday, because we have a game where we have the same time as the rush hour traffic. Metro employees responded, and we were able to move people to and from the game without incident. The service levels were high, and the quality, I think, was outstanding, and the performance of our employees was outstanding. That night and the next morning, I heard, but the true test comes Wednesday night, when there are three games. And that was last night. And yesterday, we carried over 800,000 passengers, one of the top 10 ridership days in our history. And we did so, and we moved people for all three events. I believe now the real test is on the 17th, when the Pope comes in town and has an event at National Stadium. I just want to assure this board that we're prepared, we're ready, we have our plans in place, and I want to thank all Metro employees for the outstanding efforts and success that they had in these last three events. And with that, I was going to turn over to Mr. Francis.
Well, before we do that, we now have a quorum. And so is there a motion to approve the minutes as if read?
I move that both sets of minutes be approved as read, as if read.
Okay. So move and second the discussion on either set of minutes. All those in favor? Further discussion? All those in favor of the minutes as if read for both meetings, say aye. Aye. Opposed? No. The ayes have it. The minutes are approved. Mr. Benjamin.
Thank you. I just wanted to thank you and your entire staff. As you noted, you had some challenges. The challenges you did extremely well. I think all of us on the board are very, very pleased. And it was a good job. We look forward to many more opportunities for you to test yourselves and do every bit as well.
Thank you, Mr.
Well, Mr. Benjamin, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, I see we've been joined by Mrs. Hutchins. We, in the District of Columbia, of course, were among the most anxious about this result. And I think that when we have a lot of detailed questions, but you're absolutely right. I mean, that we need to attend considerable attention to the major performance issues. And as we're boring in here, boring in there, and some of us, of course, have not been supportive of micromanaging the board, and that has recently manifested itself in such great responsibilities, which we've dedicated to you, Mr. Cato. But the fact of the matter is that we had great success in all of this, and those are the times when how this authority performs really matters. And so it puts everything else in context. And so on behalf of the District of Columbia, although there are people here who have voices from the District of Columbia besides my own, we commend you for this splendid achievement.
Is there further discussion on whatever we're discussing right now?
This has already been said, but I guess I'll go and say it. I think, again, Mr. General Manager, job well done by you, by your team. And if I could, I'd like to call out a couple people, not that worked on this, the day of the events, but there are a couple really key people in the authority that worked with the city over the last year and a half. I want to thank John Thomas for his work on the construction of the Metro Rail Station, Jim Hughes for his work on the planning, and then really just Gerald and you for your work in making sure your folks supported the city in getting there. I think it was a job well done, many lessons learned, and we'll keep delivering as we go forward the rest of the season.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you for your work.
Further, Ms. Hutchins?
Yeah, I'd say congratulations, too, because I don't think it's just a District of Columbia. You all were very successful, but the region enjoyed it. And there were, I mean, the compliments that I've heard were not from the district. They were from outside and all around the region. So I think it's a real fabulous opportunity for Metro, as well as the District of Columbia in their success with the Beth Paul Stadium and all of the other
Thank you.
Mr.
Yes, let me also congratulate the Wamana staff for their efforts. I actually did attend the game on Saturday night, the Orioles game, and that was the first big test. And I actually was on the platform at the Navy Yard at 5:40 when the game was at 6 o'clock game started. It was packed. And I said, how are they going to get all these people out of here? And it happened. And I was very pleased with that. Got to the game 10 minutes later, pretty good as far as I was. On the way out, my wife had a problem with her card. And she didn't get one of the electronic ones. She had a regular paper card, and there was somebody right there to help her with it. Got stuck in the machine and got retrieved very quickly and on our way. So everyone really performed in a superior manner. Greatly appreciated.
Mr. McKay?
I have to weigh in, or I don't want to be the only one to nod. Now that I heard his story, I don't feel so bad because it must have been something with the wives that night, because my wife had the exact same problem with her Smart Trip card, and we were leaving the Wizards game, and the staff who was working at the Gallery Place station after the Wizards game did a phenomenal job, not only helping her get her card through without incident, but also making sure people moved out in a timely manner. So I echo what the rest of the board has said. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, with that, Mr. Francis, thank you very much.
Okay, Mr. Graham, committee, let me first apologize for being a little late, I guess, for the person that has to deliver the on-time performance presentation. My on-time performance, it was within 2 minutes, and that's a deviation we use, so I think I didn't have to execute a service recovery plan yet, so I appreciate that. For the third consecutive month, our overall on-time performance has consistently remained over 90%. For the month of February, the actual number is 92%, the same as the previous month and the previous year. The next couple of slides, which would be 11 and 12, describe each line section. And I'm also happy to report that each line section's on-time performance is at or above 90%. And when you look at it from the previous month as compared to the previous years, there may be a slight deviation, about 1%, but in some cases we exceeded that. As you notice on the red line is at 92%. Next slide. As we discussed in the past in previous meetings, one of the things that we were monitoring and will continue to monitor is the subsystem components on the rail cars that cause us some delays. But in this particular graph, what it shows you is any system failure that we have that's within 2 minutes does not cause us delays and affect our on-time performance, but anything after that does. And which is normal too in the subsystems, is that you'll notice that doors and brakes are going to be leading most of the time, because obviously operating a rail car, just like driving your own personal car, you accelerate and use your brakes and your doors more than anything. Next slide. But I did want to focus on what is causing the major incidents that affect the rail system. And as you notice, 25% are the doors, I'm sorry, 25% are the brakes, 28% are doors. But I wanted to talk about the 16% and the 6%, the others and the customer-related incidents. We do have quite a bit of customer-related incidents that happen within the month period, and that can be related to medical challenges that our customers have or sick customers on the train. We have to at some time address those issues, and at some point in time we have to stop the train and get medical assistance for our customers. The 6% reflects police activities, suspicious packages and other things that might have to happen on the system that we have to address, and in some cases have a service recovery plan that takes place with that, because as you know, with a suspicious package, what happens is sometimes we can't service the station. We either run through the station, or at times, depending on the severity of it, we may not have to service the station at all and have to use a bus bridge or some other method to get our customers back and forth from the different stations and continue their trips on their lines. Next slide. Our bus mean distance between failure is at 7,400, which far exceeds the previous month. If you remember, next slide, last month, Mr. Wallace was here and we focused on the hybrids. We had a microcomputer problem, the module that he brought in and showed everyone that was causing problems with the hybrid. I wanted to report to you, to the committee, that on March the 24th, Cummings engine had came in and they started the replacement process. We're looking to have all those modules replaced by the end of this month or the early part of May. And I will report back to the committee next month as to if they completed the rehab project in that, and also how the hybrids are functioning now that we changed the modules out. Escalator elevator reliability. Our escalator availability is at 95%, and the elevator availability is at 97.1%. The next slide that we'll show you, I guess we'll have to go to the service recovery plan after all, Peter, and you can look in your presentation packet. Mr. Graham had asked us to put together our top 12 elevator and escalators. We put that together for the 90-day period, starting from December, January through February. And these are the top 12 elevator and escalators with the most non-scheduled outages. And when you look in your package, you'll see in December, we ranked them from 1 to 12. Station name, the unit number is the unit number of the escalator, and the outage, the number of times that particular unit was out. Now, of course, one of the things that I did, and when you looked at these numbers, you know, you start looking at 18 and going down and seeing that it's quite a bit of numbers. And the research showed that 48% of our outages were due to this mechanism on the escalator. It's called a comb plate. We have a safety feature built into that comb plate that if there's any obstructions, which we see sometimes in small rocks or scarves or hats or whatever, that escalator will go to what I call a fail-safe mode and stop. For the Navy Yard, I know we had some incidents that took place where we had a hat stuck in and we had a scarf stuck in, but that's a safety feature that is built in. And what happens is, once that occurs, the station manager cannot come out and reset that escalator, so we have to call an Ellis employee to come out, and they have to physically do that. The other thing I looked at is that I believe 30 or 32 of these escalators out of the 34 were repaired within the same month. And what that told me as well is, even though we do have outages, our Ellis employees are responding and repairing these escalators as quick as possible. The elevators were similar. We had about 28 of the elevators were listed in there on the top 12. Something similar to what I just explained is that out of those 28, 20 of them were down and repaired within the same month. again, that's a response from the Ellis team. But what it also showed us is that we will continue to monitor these escalators and elevators. We know at times that we're going to have failures in them, but it's the response time getting to them and trying to get the elevators back. One of the challenges that we face with the elevators is the doors. And we come in, we hold the doors, or the doors get banged for whatever reason, and the sensitivity in the doors will take them off the tracks, and then what has to happen again is we have to call the Ellis personnel to come out and repair those.
Let's pause here, because I don't think, I do appreciate you identifying what, for the want of a more understandable term, we might call the dirty dozen kind of, you know, the ongoing problematic situations in escalators and elevators. But I don't think we have this refined sufficiently, because Brookland, which is nowhere to be found on the escalator list, has not been in service since July of 07. And so, you know, we need another category, you know, not functioning at all. And how many weeks not functioning at all has continued. And let me use this example also to report on some of the comments that I have received about Brookland, which has, in fact, the escalator of Brookland has not been working since July of 2007. I received an email from Diana Zinkel, who happens to be a WMATA RAC member, and back in March, and she indicated to me that residents of her neighborhood have made inquiries since July 2007 about when the escalator would come back into service. They have received a series of estimated completion dates, November 7th, January 8th, March 7th, March 14th, and as of this email, the most recent one she had received was March 31st. And that has since been extended until April 08, which the sign that now appears, at least as of Monday, April the 7th, which is just this past Monday, the sign that is at the Brookland escalator says, quote, escalator modernization work, estimated completion date April 08, which is pasted on the sign. And it says, thank you for your understanding, or it may say thank you for your patience. But in the same email string, and this is what, you know, this is a particular sore point, which we don't seem to have. I don't, you know, I've authored a resolution which this board has passed, and we're still not getting to the point where we really are indicating communication to our customers. Because in an email to Zinkel and me on April the 4th, the real reason for the delay was explained. And it says, this particular renovation has been unexpectedly problematic because the specific type of escalator is no longer manufactured. We've all known that. And its condition was much worse than anticipated. And we have continued to discover even more issues with the electrical system, and we have taken time to troubleshoot and repair them. We are now in the final stages of repair, and the contractor is awaiting shipment of some parts that will allow for completion of the job. To avoid providing you with incorrect information again, I will refrain from stating a specific date when the escalator will reopen. Didn't refrain from stating it on the sign, however. But here is the type of communication, the type of information that communicates to our customers. And why is it, Mr. Kato? We all appreciate your great success at the National Ballpark. But why is it that we cannot, in this great system, with all of its employees, find a way to make a sign that gives people this type of specific information, and it doesn't require, you know, six or seven emails to get this? Why isn't this information posted at Brookline?
Everyone
who comes to this escalator, which has been off July, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, which is now in its tenth month of not operating, unidentified by your report, Mr. Francis, I might ask. Why aren't we doing this? And how? And this is not compliant with the resolution this board passed, which I authored. That's my question.
Mr. Graham, I have David Lacoste here that would like to speak to that, but I would say one of the things that we looked at on this report to add, Brooklyn is a rehab escalator, and one of the things I want to add on the report is any time we're doing any kind of rehabilitation to the escalator or elevators, that it would be part of this.
I want a different category. I want a category that says escalator not functioning January, February, March, and for whatever period of time it's not functioning. Elevator ditto, because, you know, these are, I mean, we've become the laughing stock of this whole region on these two issues. But why is it that we're not, communicating some helpful information to people so they can look at this and say, well, we now understand. And most reasonable people would read a sign like that and say, well, you know, they've run into unexpected problems, the equipment's no longer being manufactured, there's electrical issues which they didn't anticipate. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. First, with Brooklyn, I mean, we've run into all these issues. I have some good news. The good news is the escalator is being inspected today and should be in service by this afternoon if everything goes well. To talk about the signs, if you recall, we used to have signs on our rehabs with Gantt charts and schedules posted that we thought was useful information to the customer. Back in October of 2006, we were told to not put those signs up because they had too much information and no one was reading them. It was at a board meeting that we were directed not to post those kinds of signs. Now, I'm more than willing to go back to that. We have designs that include, you know, like Microsoft Project Gantt charts.
I don't know what a Microsoft Project Gantt chart is.
Yeah. Well, it's a construction schedule. We could post a construction schedule on the signs.
I think the direction is really clear. Yeah. I won't make any excuses why they're not up. We just need to get them up. And you have brought this up to my attention several times. It is a failure on my part to get that done. And I will work with the staff to, even if there's old signs, we'll put them back up again.
Yeah, let me just conclude my comment by saying this is in the much larger category of simply communicating, like when we make a PA announcements, you know. It's just giving people some real information that they can absorb into something, particularly something here, this is 9-10 months, you know, of dysfunction. And if this escalator is not operating today, I really want you to take the language from this, from David Lacoste, right? David Lacoste.
Yes, sir.
From your own email and put it up at Brookland so that people know. Now, let's see. I saw Mr. McKay and then Mr. Giancola and then Mr. Monaghan.
Right. Just briefly want to add to your comments because it brought to my attention we had a similar issue at Huntington, and the sign on April 4th read that the escalator would reopen on April 2nd. So I want to make sure that we spend an equal amount of attention, you know, looking at the accuracy of the dates on the signs. There's a specific date listed on the Huntington escalator that would reopen on April 2nd. And to be standing there April 4th seeing that just makes me more frustrated than had I not seen the sign in the first place. So I just want to make sure that we focus on the accuracy of what the sign reads as much as we do focus on getting that information out.
Mr.
Yeah, building on that, I would ask, basically, maybe we need a separate report on just the status of the elevator, escalator repair program, rehab program. So I'd like to see that. Related to that, you may want to actually try to develop some statistics about, okay, here's how long we expected to have some repairs done, and this is how long it actually took. In other words, maybe you're comparing your on-time completion versus the schedule. That would be helpful. But the bigger issue to me is back to what Chair Graham has said, communications. I'm not sure if we have an integrated communication system that all the various divisions of Metro understand what that means. And maybe this group, the group that maybe you had, doesn't doesn't have the idea of how to communicate properly. Maybe other divisions can train or teach you how. Maybe we need the public affairs office to get involved with having a person assigned to how you can communicate better. You know, maybe it's just not a consistent communication theme, because I know in some other areas you do communicate very well. This area may be a very poor area and needs to be beefed up a little bit, or at least given more professional attention about how you properly communicate. So I would suggest that, to look at that. So.
My question is a little bit slightly different tack, and it's really, I was just looking over this chart and comparing the escalators and the elevators and looking for overlap between down escalators and down elevators. So I just had a question about how there's one group, but they kind of function separately. I imagine mechanics for escalators are slightly different than your mechanics for elevators, or is there a tighter linkage between the two?
They're actually, it's a very tight link.
Okay, that is.
They can handle both.
So I guess my question goes, in terms of, imagine, we'll take for instance, in December 2007, we had unit 2 of the escalator down, and we also had unit 1 of the elevators down. Are we going in, and when you deal with one escalator, are you looking at every other facility at the station and basically doing a preventative look so that we don't have to come back and address the same location the next month when that one goes down?
Which station are you talking about?
So you're saying, if we go in at whatever station, U Street, Boston, are we just looking at all the escalators and elevators? Yes.
You are doing
if they repair one, they're looking to make sure everything else is functioning, or they're going to report from the station manager as well that they're having problems. Because we want to utilize, be it more efficient in utilizing our workforce too, so it makes more sense to take a look at the whole station when they're down there.
And sometimes, Emeka, when there's, you know, if you see elevators and escalators on this list, it's indicative of other things that are going on. Like, for instance, Columbia Heights, there's a lot of construction in the area. A lot of things end up in the escalator cone plates. And you know, it's just, that's a lot of what happens. It's a very dynamic situation that sometimes is affected by things that are outside the station.
You know, I have been somewhat critical of this chart, even though I suggested it, but I think we can refine it. But even what it is right now does tell us something. Look at Anacostia in January. Unit 2 in Anacostia is out 17 times in January. And then the same unit is out 20 times in February. You know, I think that when we have, that's a lot of outage. I mean, did January have 29 days this year?
February did.
I mean, did February have 29 days?
Yes.
So there's 60 days, and in Anacostia, unit number 2, out of 60 days, this is out 37.
No. Mr. Chair, if I can, I think we need to bring back to another chart saying the reason why they're out. In some cases, you know, we have those emergency buttons on the escalators, and at times they're pushed, particularly during the school hours. And that impacts at a certain location. I'm not making excuses for it because we have some actual repair issues. I think we need to break down the categories of why they occur also.
But I think that's exactly where I was going. I think on these, because I don't know why there are 37 outages, but we need some explanation when the Dirty Dozen is really out of control. And we need an explanation on how many other escalators or elevators are there in the system that have been totally out, a la Brooklyn, you know, not for maybe 10 months, but for 3 months or 4 months. How many are there that fit that category?
I understand. Okay.
What's the answer to the question?
Well, that's what we have to bring back. I don't know if we know the answer. Or which one?
How many elevators or escalators have been out completely, a la Brooklyn, for a period of weeks and months?
We have four escalators, and two of them are major the rehabs. One of them is Brooklyn, one of them is Potomac, and this is current, that have been out for a period of time. We have a major repair on one of the escalators at Wheaton
and a major repair on an escalator at National Airport. Those are the only ones right now on the top of my head that I know of. And then elevators, we have some, you know, rehabs. I believe right now there's probably 3 or 4 that are out of service right now for rehabs. Others are just, you know, they're calls. And what I'd like to, I thought I heard a little bit of a misconception. The number of failures that you're seeing on this 30 dozen is not indicative of the number of days it was out. In other words, 17 failures in Anacostia does not mean it was out for 17 days. It just means it shut off 17 times, and we have to go back and fix it.
Well, actually, we're not sure.
Right, that's why we're going to bring back the report to you.
It could be out for 17 days. Yeah. You don't know that for sure. But anyway, I would only conclude by saying that I think where we've had Brookland rehabs that have been going on for a long period of time, in elevators and escalators, can we get appropriate signage?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
24 to 48 hours explaining what's going on.
We're going to work with our communications group. And
but quickly,
it would be very quick.
And then I'd like a report at the next committee meeting, Mr. Cato.
Yes,
I'd like a report on each of those matters as to what kind of signage went up.
Where your pictures up there.
Is there further, Mr. Bonner?
A different topic. I kind of want to go back for the
Newry Station. Well, we're going to Metro Access, but you want to go back?
I want to go back.
Okay.
A question about some of the performance goals that we have in the system. The rail reliability looks like it's much, much better. I guess at some point we need to have a discussion about whether or not that 95% on time reliability is it, what's magic about that? Is it achievable magic, or is it, again, the Holy Grail?
I wouldn't say the Holy Grail, but everything that's mechanical, you're going to have breakdowns. And you're going to have overloads, you're going to have problems, which will cause some delays in the one-time performance. To get to 100%, for an example, I mean, that is an impossibility, and it's going to be equipment that never breaks down, and there is no such equipment. I think 95 is a good goal for us for this year, and that's what I believe we agreed to from a board perspective. We can have discussions about next year, but there is a point where you cannot exceed that number, or it's just because it's a mechanical piece of equipment. You have issues, other issues that happen in the system. The airlines would love to have this number. I'm not trying to say we should have them. But
a couple of other follow-ups. I saw the door malfunctions were pretty substantial on the rail. What's driving those? Are those just over time, or are we talking about?
I think there's two issues. The 5000 series cars have a malfunction, and we're working with the manufacturer to change up the circuit boards over the next year. Having said that, a lot of the issues that cause problems, mechanical problems with the doors, are people thinking they're like elevator doors. And they get there and they touch them, they don't open, and you see people pulling on the doors. And I have had some discussions with staff about, can we have a campaign to communicate that information. I've seen people do it. I've talked to them, and, you know, like anything, if you continue to push on that, it's going to break. And so it's a combination of those two issues.
Yeah, that's a good response. And the last one has to do with the bus mean distance between failures. It seems like we're starting to kind of settle down and kind of be at a consistent number, which is substantially higher than the goal. Any sense of what's driving on these? It's good.
I'm going to say it's good work for our mechanics. Yeah. He gave me that opening. Actually, I did talk to Milo Victoria about that, and he's very pleased because his number is higher than systems that have similar equipment that we do. And that does not mean we shouldn't set this goal higher, but it's preventative maintenance as well as the actual maintenance of the equipment.
So that,
and it's a younger fleet, too.
The goal that we have is based upon, was it industry standard or just experience? Or
I think, you know, I have to go back and talk to Mr. Victoria about the specifics of why the goals were developed. I suspect, I mean, there are some industry standards, but it's also based upon our experience.
And last question, I won't belabor it, is just, for the bus system, we don't have anything that talks about is reliability as well. Reliability is the equipment reliability, but there's nothing that talks about schedule or service reliability.
I sense there's a request by this board to add that.
I think that we need to go there. I mean, I think that's what's going to make this system far more attractive, one for people that can get some sense of reliability on the service. So I just wanted to put my 2 cents there, and I know there's about 10 cents to come from this guy.
Well, actually, I think I have 2 cents or 10 cents. But.
Mr. Zimmerman?
Chairman, I'd like to. Yeah. Comparable measure of hillside, hospital, at the top. You gotta wait. What's wrong with the system? On the bus side, a bus comes in 15 minutes, that's considered great bus service. And if a bus is only scheduled at 15 minutes,
regarding the major incidents piece. You noted that those can be very difficult disruptions. When was our medical policy established, and has it been reviewed? The decision of when you must offload the person from the train to hold the train up and those kind of conditions?
That's kind of a decision at that time, and when supervisors arrive, it just depends on the medical condition of the passenger at the time. Sometimes the alert can be minor, and sometimes it can be major, where we don't know if we need to move the person or not. And that's when the operator usually will come back and communicate that to the controller, and then that's when the calls will go out to the sheriff's or the fire department to come to assist.
To answer the question, I'm not sure there was, and I will go back and look, there was what date the policy was put into place. I would suspect a lot of it is left up to the discretion of the people on scene, because I don't know if I want to put a policy out to say if it's a heart attack, we do this, if it's D, we do that, but
but I will go back and review it. What I suspect is more of a common prudent sense type policy that we have in place, but we'll bring that back also.
The reason I ask is that someone who was familiar with a different property noted that theirs had been developed over a study with some medical folks who gave a template as to what it was, and I was just curious as to, as you said, someone's not certain what it is, so naturally they're going to wait for the professional folks to come, and so the train sits there, versus how do you set some sense of window of liability to be able to make a different kind of decision, and who could help and assist in doing that, versus relying upon a very prudent station manager or person that says, okay, I'm not going to interfere, therefore we're going to hold this train, and that becomes a big disruption for what may not be as necessary. So it would be interesting knowing, and maybe there's something that we would like to think about if it is a... from what you hear, you do notice that it can be very much a huge impact on...
It is.
Well, service.
Just a quick question. On the chart that shows the cause of failures of buses, you've got the hybrid, you've got the CNG, you've got the diesel, but there's not any progress in the reason why they don't show up.
That was what was requested initially, I think, from the committee. But if we need to add the rest of the fleet, we can certainly do that.
I don't know whether it's significant.
We can take a look. I'll take a look at that.
All right. And now we can proceed to Metro Access.
Metro Access, the ridership continues to grow. Our on-time performance goal is at 93%. For the month of February, we were at about 91.5, and that was due to the increase of ridership. And Mr. Kidney's staff are continually using our own existing equipment, but is also using the taxi cab service also to supplement picking up our customers and getting them from point A to point B. Next slide. Next slide shows the percentage of missed late trips. Our goal was at 1.9, and for the present month of February, we're at 1.8. So in this particular case, down is good.
Just a question. On these missed or late trips, are we able to determine the what I call the deviation? For example, that one that I'm reporting to you, we make the mistake of which doors show up at, for some reason, person, then that becomes a missed trip for the individual when there was miscommunication there. Do we get a chance to kind of look into those to determine?
Absolutely, although I think it's important to clarify the terminology, because a missed trip is a situation that is not within the control of the customer. When we call something a no-show, that's when we're saying the customer was not in place at the location during the window. So missed trips are those where either the customer, the customer did not ride, but we also were not at the location during the time frame that we needed to be. But this particular statistic mixes together those situations also with excessively late trips, which are those where we did not arrive until 30 minutes beyond the window. And those track fairly consistently with the fluctuations in the overall on-time performance. But they're usually caused, by, as you say, in many cases by the driver and the customer not connecting up with each other. And so the longer that the driver is trying to locate the customer and board them, then that extends the lateness. So that's why we track it separately, because we're not only interested in having a good overall on-time performance rating, but when we are late, we're trying to minimize that as well. So we have two separate measures.
Further discussion? Thank you very much. This is the beginning of our new year in terms of committee work, and I've had some additional thoughts on the oversight responsibilities of this committee. I would like to see this committee, I would remind everybody, is called the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee,
And this might be subject to some interpretation, so others will comment if they feel they want to comment. But I would like to have a monthly report on crime in the system. And for the next meeting, I would like you to go back to the beginning of the Metro fiscal year, which would be July 1, and give us your crime reports for each of those months, incidents and other things that have happened within the system, both bus and rail, and Metro access. Yes, you want to interrupt? Pardon me? No, I was going to finish, but if there's something there.
Have a thought.
Okay, good. And I would like to see Chief Taborn attend these meetings so that if there are any questions regarding the safety in the sense of the security of the system, you know, that we could have those comments. In addition, the safety of our equipment is obviously, I think that's within our jurisdiction as well. And so if there are reports on problems associated with that, you know, if there's a safety issue associated with buses or, you know, or other equipment, we'd like reports on that if you have them.
To make sure for clarification, Chairman.
Accidents.
Okay.
You know, we don't have to describe all of this right here, but that should be part of the report to us. Assaults on bus drivers. You know, I mean, everything within the broad category of safety, I think should be the subject. And whoever on the staff is engaged in those issues, it would be nice to have them here, so that we can identify that and work with them.
We have both our safety director and our chief. As you know, I try to minimize the staff unless it's necessary for them to be here. Without report, they will be here.
Right. No, but I think the principals, I think, should be here. I'd also like that to include a report on our security cameras and you know, any problems related to the functioning of those cameras. I mean, the whole, you know, I mean, give us a sense of this. I mean, generally, as the members of this board know, I'm not inclined to a lot of information items, but I think this committee's review of these reports on a monthly basis is very important to the oversight function that we have. So in this meeting, for example, this is the only matter on the agenda, and that's fine. In fact, I noticed in the upcoming agendas, May it's the only item, and that's fine too. Because I think the time that we spend discussing these important issues, safety, customer relations, and customer service and operations is important. Mr. Chairman? No, I said fiscal year.
Normally, with things that we've been ongoing, you know where it is.
We don't have that on our other data as before us. We don't have a historical.
Well, right now, you're looking at stuff that's a year back. Not uncommon for us to look 7 years back. In any case, we've been monitoring on an ongoing basis. That's of it.
Well, we've just not had recent reports on, except as issues arise, such as the bus assault on bus drivers. But I think we should see that obviously tomorrow. And I would be glad, actually, I've been meeting regularly with Mr. Francis, and at our next meeting, we can actually look over specifically the kind of data that would contribute. Because I think on this score, we might have more than less to begin with, and then we find it from there. Mr. McKay.
Question for clarification. When you're requesting data, are you looking for raw incident numbers, or are you looking for more specificity, like location, where these issues are occurring, or have you given any thought to that? Because certainly if we have locations in the system
have incidents occurring, I think that should be particularly.
I think that's very insightful. It's the same point as with the escalators and the elevators. I mean, we do need to look for locations to see if we're having specific problems. And I know also, have we done anything on we have some cameras on the outside of our stations. There is a camera at U Street on the outside. Is there any other station that has an exterior camera similar to that?
I'm not aware of it. But just like that, there's other cameras, facilities that are adjacent to our stations, but not our cameras.
Right, but this is our camera. Yeah. So we just did it on that one location and then didn't do it again anywhere else.
I'm not aware of it, Jack. I'm asking the question.
Well, maybe the next time, could we have a report on what the efficacy is or what the usefulness is or the utility of that so that we can see whether it doesn't make any sense to expand this along the lines of what Mr. McKay is saying. And if we've got areas where there's repeated problems, Mr. Zimmerman?
Yes.
How many we got them on?
How many work?
Yeah, I have the Metro Ramada budget before my committee at the council. And I have on various occasions raised concerns about how Metro Ramada could be contributing more to the safety of some of our station entrances. So we're going to be looking at how we might achieve that. In terms of cameras and other issues. And so we're going to, that's the other thing I wanted to say was we want to see deployment numbers on the police, the transit
yes.
police. We want to see deployment numbers by as much detail as you can provide us on deployment, where our police officers are, where they're assigned, undercover work, the gamut. And Chief Tabor has certainly been, he's off to a very good start, I think. And so, his expertise on this will be very helpful.
I have to make that report.
Anything further? Is there anything further on the issue of the type of information that you want or any other issue? Because we have, in my mental schedule for this committee, we have 6 minutes.
This is a policy question related to that. It's really about our police force, transit police, and their ability to enforce. I'm being very parochial here in the city parking or double parking or parking in bus loading areas. I think that's something I'd like to discuss at some length. I know that it happens pretty regularly throughout the city, and I know we'd have a pretty busy police force. Chief Lanier keeps them busy doing other things. This is an area that impacts the service, impacts neighborhoods. It could be useful to see if there's a better collaboration, as I know they're already able to enforce laws within the District of Columbia because they are certified to do so.
Yes, in fact, I received an email from Mr. Graham this morning on that issue, which I responded to Mr. Graham, asking if we had the authority to issue tickets. I had that discussion with the new chief. We do not have the authority to issue parking tickets outside of metro facilities. However, I asked the chief to work with government relations, and I also asked for your help, Mr. Graham, to work on city or state statutes that would give our police the authority to issue tickets in bus zones as well as in bus-only lanes and other transit-type facilities. And the reason is I observe on a daily basis all over this region the bus zones says no parking, but the sign is not, it's just ignored constantly. And so buses are pulling up, and they're in the middle of the street blocking traffic in order to pick up passengers. So that is an initiative. We would like to come back to the three jurisdictions and to ask for a statute to give our police department that ability to issue those tickets.
Actually the email this morning went more to the issue of equipping the buses with cameras. I mean, in the District of Columbia, we are about to authorize our street sweeping vehicles to be equipped with cameras to issue tickets when people do not move their cars during the street sweeping. Did you hear this, Mr. Monahan, since you raised this issue? Are you listening? The issue is not so much, I don't think this is necessarily a good use for transit police, but the issue is to equip the buses with cameras that would take, that would issue a la our red light cameras and our speeding cameras to issue, and for that they would need authorization from the council, but that's a question of whether we should do that, and when Mr. Cato has wondered whether we should do it compact-wide. Yeah, because this is parking in the bus loading zone. Yes.
It's a very interesting question. Asking. Consideration on our side, as you are the relevant lawmaker. Our state, the question will be, any local authority, or is it a Dillon rule issue which about to be out of Richmond? Which means we have to explain some legislative galax why we have to allow authority outside the state. I don't know the answer to that. That's the complication.
Yes. I do believe, unless I remember incorrectly, that the compact, the third compact, gives us the right to issue tickets and do all enforcement within 75 feet of a bus stop. I think that trumps the local law on those issues.
Ask that question.
So, yeah, I guess that's what I was asking. Is you might want to look into whether there's anything that modifies that or constrains that. I think I remember wrong, but I believe it was 75 feet.
So that would, yes,
when you say the clarity as to what that statement is, what policy is it bus stop or is it entrance to a station? Those
it,
kind of.
When it was written, it was, I believe it was bus stops, but it may be station entrances.
And the reason I raise it as we have this discussion, you know? Yeah, go ahead.
What is it now? Let's be clear. Let's be clear on what it is. For what? 150 feet to do what? To do what? To issue parking tickets?
Well, let's not.
We'll work on this, okay.
Can we get this researched for our next meeting?
You will.
Is someone making a note of all these next meetings?
Yes, they are. There's several people doing that.
I mean, I don't want this just to be promptly forgotten.
Oh. You would not accept that, sir.
Somebody's keeping track of our the many thoughts that's quite inspired.
And we will go this afternoon and review that list. We do that every meeting.
Yes. As we talked about these, we talked about bus stops and access, but I hope we don't forget the disability access. Twice I've come to this building and there is a vehicle passed in the curb cut, which I look at it as pretty horrendous in terms of someone who needs to use it. And it's the same access that we look for with all transit access. So we need to make it broad enough so it includes our traffic.
Okay, so anything further? There being no further business to come before the committee, this meeting, by the way, was started at 9:02.
It's going to be good.
I think most of us can say there's no.
2 minutes.
That's the window.
Time performance.
Yes.
The hard working chairman had to be on email at 6 a.m.
But I did it. And so we're going to be faithful to the time. So without further business to come before the committee, it's now 10 o'clock, and this meeting is adjourned.